I'm Christian Colling, with me is James McLean, and we are naturally here to talk about the latest episode of Doctor Who, The Trial of the Time Lord, called Doctor God. Wasn't that one? Could have been, but it wasn't. It was, of course, The Timeless Children, in which the various things have been hinted at throughout Doctor Who Series 12 come to fruition in various levels of success and punkishness. Often at this point, I kind of provide like a brief summary of the episode. This is one that I don't think people are going to forget in a hurry, whether they understood it or not. And, you know, I've been spending more time than usual this morning reading reviews, comments on Twitter, comments on Reddit, comments from our listeners on Facebook, which we'll be looking at later on. And there seems to be a general level of the season's over, let's move on to the next thing, as a kind of median point, and then everything else around there is kind of like, it was awesome, and all the way down to what the hell is going on. So, James, we arrive at this point, we're just the two of us discussing this week, obviously. So, we arrive at this point of the series with high hopes from last week's episode, Ascension of the Cybermen. And we all gave it a 9. Are you still happy with that rating?
What you mean, has this one affected my rating for the previous one?
Yeah.
No, and I don't think it especially ever does. I mean, okay. Thinking back of Utopia, which we keep going back to, the fodder ones from Utopia weren't as good, but I never diminished Utopia for me. So I don't think it has. I think it's done what was worried about, that it's tried to do too much.
Yeah.
In again too little time, and so you get this feeling of two storylines competing rather than synthesizing, or you know, carrying a synergy. And you can see where it's trying to create the synergy, where it's trying to sort of dovetail the sort of stories of the past with the push of where the Time Lords will go next, all with this thread of regeneration through it. And there's some clever ideas in there, but again, it's just too much. I mean, the problem with television, I guess, is it doesn't really lend itself well to three-part structures like books do. So far as you don't really get many that are trilogies, where you have a part one, part two, and part three. And when they do, they generally don't ever feel that consistent. Maybe that's a massive generalization, but certainly for Doctor Who, it feels that way. And, you know, the first episode feels like a very interesting first act last week. This feels like a second and third episode compressed into two. And I think it suffers a little for it. But I think there's some, I wouldn't say they're maverick ideas, because it's material which, you know, people like Lance Parkin, Paul Cornell, Lawrence Miles, you know, all these people have been toying with these sort of ideas for many years. This idea of there being legacies of the Doctor which exist outside of the traditional 12 regenerations. So it didn't, and Mark Platt I should throw into there as well. So it didn't really blow me away in that sort of sense, because it felt almost like a sort of canonization of some of those ideas, where those ideas tended to sort of talk about there being past incarnations of the Doctors rather than regenerations. But some of them, especially Lance Parkin stuff, as I recall, didn't dismiss that idea either. The Nth Doctor very much speaks to this. In fact, you could very much now make the Nth Doctor, which was one of the BBC books, canon. It was set on Gallifrey. It had the Doctor, but it never specifically said what Doctor it was. Mm. And it never really fit with anyone. Most people thought it was McGann's, but it was deliberately non-specific.
Yeah.
And this story would now really speak to that really well. If anything out of the books has been made canon, that's it. And I've seen lots of fun stories about, you know, do we now make Curse of the Fatal Death? Is that now canon? End of Time, the Doctor's mother at the end of Time, does that now have a new interpretation to it? So, I mean, I do applaud this episode, for while it's very uneven, there's a lot of, Chibnall's been very good at, I think anyway, revitalizing the show, not in a perfect way, and in a way that's made a lot of people angry, but he has kept it current. And, you know, having a female Doctor, whether people have enjoyed that or not, did get people talking about the show. This end will get people talking about the show. And I think that's what it needs, to be fair, to keep it fresh after 15 years. Still a lot of things that need to be ironed out, possibly, but I think that's a good position to be in.
I mean, there's two sides to this, isn't there? I mean, there's the sort of things you've just described, and then there's the impact on the other things. So, you know, so for every kind of canonizing the other Doctors in Brain of Morbius, you're then upsetting the apple cart with the first Doctor and his journey in the first sort of season into becoming grumpy old gadget who just isn't very interested in other people and goes so far as almost killing the caveman to becoming a hero. And
but does that necessarily do that? I mean, in the end, if he is now sort of tabula rasa at that point, if we assume that there's been some sort of, I mean, there's been a lot of talk recently of some of the early production synopsis where the idea would be that the Doctor Who came from this idea of him being a character with amnesia that didn't know who, no one knew who he was, and this kind of speaking to that rationale now. So in a sense, does that undo where he is at that point in the same way, maybe
because we've established a focus on things over years, whereas, you know, after 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of Doctor Who, there wasn't really a focus on where the Doctor had come from so much, because we didn't go back and read novelizations about it so much. There wasn't the ability to watch repeats, and there wasn't reading synopses on the internet and everything to crystallizing a sort of, not a canon, but a sort of like an idea of what the show is, and then to then pull the rug out somewhat in terms of that doesn't necessarily contradict things, because I wouldn't say that it does necessarily contradict things, because I see where you're coming from, but to bring in a whole new dimension of the Doctor being older than the Time Lords and more than just another Time Lord obviously springs to mind, but that whole idea of making the Doctor be extraordinary when really a lot of Doctor Who's history has just been someone travelling and finding an injustice and trying to do something about it. It all seems rather jumbled
in a sense. Oh no, I do understand what you mean, but at the same time, it's almost like what I like about it is it feels like seeing something. Seeing the same thing from a different perspective, unlike Stephen Moffat sort of dropping Clara as the person who tells the Doctor which TARDIS to pick. Things like that feel very inserted and unnecessary. This feels like it very much, like a lot of comics do, it feels like a very neat reinterpretation of what we've seen before. Like, say, for instance, the Incredible Hulk for many, many years was just a guy who got hit by gamma radiation, became very angry. Then you get to the sort of, people can correct me if I'm wrong, 70s or so, where there's a reinterpretation where it's because he was abused as a child. There's a lot of inner rage, which is then funneled through this event. So it becomes a far more, it becomes a deeper and a different way of looking at the same character. And I feel this kind of works here, because if you think, I mean, you almost mentioned it, I think, things like Silver Nemesis, where you have Lady Painforth saying she knows something about the Doctor's history, the story of the other, which is constantly put, you know, is constantly put on the line. You know, the interest of gods like Fenric suddenly becomes again more interesting. You know, the Doctor's mother in the End of Time, as you said, the Mobius production crew appearing as his past regenerations. There's a lot of things which kind of sort of go, okay, with all those things in mind, which you don't have to have, because as you say, before this point this wasn't canon, it does actually kind of fit quite nicely in a weird way. And the fact that we can't dismiss, in the last, especially the last 15 years, the Doctor has been fairly godlike and has superseded his race have been wiped out through most of this period, and he, she, they have gone on, and that's kind of how we've now been established. So this also speaks to that there is something enduring about this character which goes beyond what we've seen before. And I do get your point, and I do understand that. And I think we can't deny that by going down this route, we lose certain things. As you say, certain things get lost. And it's not just stories or, you know, extended universe stuff. Certain ways of perceiving a character gets lost. And I think that is true. And that is unfortunate. But I think at some point you do have to try and sort of motivate some new energies and new thinkings around an idea. And maybe this was quite a good way and a little less safe than we've had for the last 15 years. So I think, yes, it's caused ripples. But I have been surprised how largely from the bubbles I've been looking at, people have been fairly happy to negotiate this, perhaps more so than the Doctor changing gender, to be honest. And I include myself in that, because I remember our first conversations were along the lines of, like, I don't trust male writers to write a female Doctor without them constantly referring to their sex all the time. And you know, innuendos about breasts. And that never happened. But
let's briefly go down that line with another angle. OK, so you've got Timeless Child discovered by Tectuan. Now, you alluded to the Claire Bloom character in The End of Time. From my interpretation of the Master's narration, Tectuan became Rassilon.
I think, again, that is still up to interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I read it. But regardless of if, I mean, and if that's the case, then Tectuan became Rassilon, who's recognized as a male character. So a woman becomes a man and then becomes, like, sets up this immense historical sort of older civilization in the universe and a massive sort of patriarchal civilization.
I was going to say, a patriarchy, is that what we're looking for?
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, I mean, women of Doctor Who don't seem to have cottoned on to that last night. I don't know if they've discovered it as yet. And that alone sort of boxes my head with inconsistencies. And then you've got the whole thing, you've got the rest of this story, which we haven't even touched on yet, and that's the presence of the Master. And then there's the other bit with the companions, but we'll come back to that later probably. But the whole thing with the Master, and I you know, the Matrixy bit and the Master bit, and I mean, there is one thing, and we'll talk to Master in more detail. I think there is an interesting thing about this is that it's actually done in such a vague way that it could actually be retconned. I don't think it will be.
Yeah.
But it does seem to be done in such a way that it could. And I mean, did you at any point think that actually the rumours, I don't know if you'd heard any, but I had, were actually wrong, that it was actually going to be the Master?
Well, the Timeless Child.
Yeah, and that, which would have given the Master some sort of, at least for the audience, a greater understanding into the Master's motivations. Because we've always had this thing of not knowing too much about the Doctor being a good thing, and knowing more about the Doctor and arguably less about the Master this season, because everything that's happened with the Master in previous seasons is certainly throughout the Capaldi era seems to have been completely lost, certainly in terms of immediate backstory, characterization and references. So I do wonder if actually it might have been a better, the Master, hey, I'm, you've all come from me, I've got an excuse to be in charge now. Oh, you don't want me to be in charge then, right, I'll destroy you all and I'll replace you with Cybermen. That seems like more of a consistent motivation for the Master. I don't really think there was an awful motivation for the Master that was particularly thought
the
through.
The Master was the weak point of the whole episode for me.
Yeah.
I found this time he was overplayed. His motivations, while the Master has always been quite anarchic, just felt a bit, I don't know, it didn't really feel like he needed to be there apart from this big reveal. And this sort of clever on paper idea, and I'm sure it would have been good in a book, this idea of regenerating Cybermen. And you think, well, so instead of one gold bullet, I need 12. Yeah, that's a bit of a pain, but I don't know. It just kind of felt like a very smart idea that didn't have any space to really be explored and possibly couldn't. And it just rushed things along. And it felt odd, given that his last finale last season, to me, felt very well paced. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I liked the pacing. It felt confident, even if it was for some people like a small three-year-old child holding up a painting they've done of an elephant and feeling confident about it, but everyone else feeling it's rubbish. It felt that sort of confident. Well, this felt like there was just too much stuff going on. And the Master was largely a problem with that. I kind of feel like they'd have been better off having the Master come in and out and then let the Doctor mull over this and destroy Cybermen. And that might have worked better. And just had him, which would have perhaps even been more powerful for the character, to come in, screw with the Doctor's head, and then go deal with that, and then just leave.
Yeah.
And that would have perhaps carried more.
Because the Cybermen could, Ashad and the Cybermen could have carried on with any pretensions to become Time Lords without interference, couldn't they? Yeah.
And Ashad was actually quite a good character as well. And while I quite liked the sort of suddenness of removing a main character like that, at the same time, I kind of felt, well, I was more interested in him than the Master, who is just, there's like a couple of moments, a couple of pockets of where he was interesting, where he was almost like begging for death, which I thought was fairly interesting. But the rest of the time, it was just too heavily deployed on a story which already has emotional deployment. And I know this starts to sound like I'm sort of backseat writing here, which I suppose we all do when we do these sort of things. Mm. But from a watcher's point of view, it felt like when you write a story like that, you look for where the emotional core is. And your emotional core can be in its comedy, it can be in its pathos, it could be in its tragedy. And the emotional core in this story, to me, was this revelation, was the Doctor. And what the Master produced here, which was an emotional core of sort of like humour and sort of craziness and anarchy, was just not required in this story. It felt like it was competing for attention within this story. And it's like, we don't need it. Go away. It was fine in Spyfall, where it was needed, because that was the core of the story, was the Master revelation and seeing what the Master does there. But in this story, it's not needed. Push it away. Yeah. And that, to me, was the problem here, is that it was just a competing, perhaps emotion is the wrong word, drama is probably the better word. It was a competing dramatic energy, which just felt messy. And to the point where you just want to just go away. I'm looking at this bit.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Is the Timeless Child Doctor Who's Last Jedi?
I don't think so, because, well, again, these are bubbles, but the people I've been looking at, and including our own Casterbrus speakers, who do tend to not always agree with me, seem to be actually fairly positive, even if they're sort of cautiously positive about the change. While, from what I could understand, The Last Jedi was loathed, even though I really, really enjoyed it. I think this is a little different. And again, this is less to do with, I mean, The Last Jedi didn't really rewrite anything per se. People just didn't like what it was doing with the characters, from what I could understand.
I think it was a combination of that and the gambling thing taking up too much time, I think.
Yeah, there was a structural narrative, a plot issue going to this world that people didn't like. And I get that. It was a bit slow at that point, but I understood what it was doing there, and I think it was quite relevant. But yeah, get that. And I get that people didn't like what they did specifically with Luke and with Leia. I, again, felt the Luke thing was totally true to character. The Leia thing, that felt reasonable to me, having watched Clone Wars and everything else. The Force is crazy, but, you know, it's a crazy thing. But this felt to me like it was a question of whether people would actually get behind the actual changes to the story history. And it has surprised me how they have. And to me, the clincher seems to be a lot of the old school fans finding some sort of almost like relief in an answer to that 5 second burst in Brain of Morbius. That seems to come up a lot. I've even seen people go, seeing that made it all make sense to me. And that reconciliation seems to really interested people. And I think it's fascinating as well as fans as how, you know, we do get sort of very incensed about things, but a lot of us do eventually sort of just come to accept it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, you know, the dislike of Missy, and now, like, Missy, actually, I'll go back to Missy's episodes. Gomez plays her really well, and she's quite a good character. You know, I think back to, I think when Jodie Whittaker was first announced, like, whoa, this is crazy. And now it's like, oh, and the Doctor came through this portal at the beginning as a girl. And it's just like, well, that doesn't bother. That seems okay to me now. I don't see any issue here. You know, we do adjust and reshape our worldview, which is kind of good. I think one of the things that interests me, which I think is could be really fascinating to tell, which no one seems to have been talking about yet, or not that I've seen, I'm sure some have, is the police box, is that the Ruth Doctor had a police box, and now that has been pretty much secured as her being like a CIA operative for the Time Lords prior to Hartnell. So that would suggest that the police box, it was, did not get stuck in Totter's Lane, but has always been somehow or for some reason iconically connected to that character. And that is also kind of interesting.
Mm. I suppose as well, there's other things as well to this, sorry, not directly related, but you've got take Deadly Assassin, where Gallifrey is populated by old men.
Yeah.
Where's all the women? Were they all born at the same time? And then all regenerated at the same time into men or something? That's something that interests me more than perhaps the Brain of Morbius, is the difference in Gallifrey between the War Games and Deadly Assassin.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, not going to get any answers to that. And obviously, when we see Gallifrey, it always tends to draw from Deadly Assassin and Five Doctors sort of Gallifrey rather than... Absolutely. The old War Game sort of.
That gives something to explore. I think the one thing from this point on I'd like to see, and I think we've said this before, is more synergy between Big Finish, BBC, and Any Books as well. Because I feel it. I mean, this has been an interesting rewrite. If I was a Big Finish, I'd probably be sort of just going like, we've just done a whole load of stuff with the Doctor and Susan prior to An Earthly Child. Doesn't mean that can't still work, but how much do we have to rethink? Can we adapt to this? Do we adapt to this? Do we stay traditional? And I would like to, I know there isn't, but to me, as I think we've said before, this is where I see the industries starting to move with the Disney Plus model, is that there's going to have to start to be a more synergy in franchises if they're going to remain sort of to a standard that fans are going to start to expect to see. And rather than these sort of massive inconsistencies as the top tier decides what to do and the rest of the tiers fumble around, beneath them, and perhaps something where they can work more together. There's just loads of things like that, which is frustrating, but it happens. I mean, as I said, I used to love Longbarrow. That was pretty much ejected from continuity.
Yeah.
Like you say, do we need to address, or do we just have to pretend that there were a lot more women on Gallifrey than we ever saw in Deadly Assassin? Or is there a reason why we have this sort of patriarchy setup of the Sisters of Khan and the Time Lords that are sort of played out, broadly speaking, in the 70s? Is there more that we can say about that? Certainly the books talked a lot about the Sisters of Khan, and so did Moffat, to be fair, as well. Mm. Is there something that can be brought in and drawn in from there? I mean, I think when you do a big rewrite like this, I think what I want to see now is I want to see this done and, almost like, okay, you've played a few big trump cards here. I want to see you start working on the rest of this deck here and not just have this as a one-off surprise thing that just then disappears, which we kind of have seen before, whether it be, the McGann half-human or the... Stephen Moffat's, Tom Baker Doctor appearing, the shunting of Gallifrey here, there and everywhere through the new series. If you're going to go down this route, let's see some roots put into it rather than just have this as a period and then there's another retcon. Because I think it's worth exploring and there's a lot of things you could possibly do with this.
There is, but I mean, like as I said earlier on, there's good and there's bad. There's good, the possibility of Peter Cushing being canon. That's good.
Mm.
Bad.
That's an interesting thing.
Yeah, bad is the idea that actually we don't need to worry when the Doctor dies because the Doctor's going to regenerate, regardless.
Well, I'm going to assume that, I mean, they took the ability, extracted the ability therefore speaks to what was originally there. And if the damage is too much, then they will die, like has always been said. But every death that the Doctor's had has been, one of the reasons to have her fall off the cliff was because Legopolis has had the Doctor fall off a large distance before and survive. So I think don't get this feeling to say that the character is immortal. I think it's to sort of say the character possibly has had a far more sheltered world prior to Hartnell. I think that would be the distinction for me, because there's a suggestion that the Doctor's work prior to this is very much as an operative rather than as a free agent, which would explain why there's not much evidence of the Doctor prior to Hartnell in any of the stories, and why the Doctor's never met himself, because she's working for an agency within the Time Lord Society, which is very clandestine and doesn't become very visible. And it's only just by a chance, as per usual in the new series, that the Doctor finds out about this thing 4 episodes before the actual thing becomes revealed, that we get to know about it. That would be my take from it anyway.
Mm.
But then, you know, what does the police box mean? I still find that fascinating. I mean, what does it say about the Doctor's wife? How do we write this in? Is there something about the police box which is more intrinsic? And then that makes that interesting when you have that moment where Hartnell's Doctor turns around and goes, oh, it hasn't changed. That's very odd. And it's like, well, maybe that's because that's the form that it always has been in. And you just think that you just thought that it's fitted into Tottersley, into a junkyard because it was a police box, but that was the form it was. Maybe its memory was returning as well. I don't know. So loads of things that could come from this.
Do you think we'll see Graham and Yaz and Ryan again?
Yeah, I think we will. I was kind of expecting one of them to die.
Yeah.
And I felt that the PR department had been sort of leaking stuff to make this work. This sort of, you know, the leaking that Tozer might be leaving. There was a meme going out BBC about people dying in Cybermen episodes, linking back to her comment in the 8th episode, and that maybe we might have a death in this episode which might kill the fun for the others and they might leave. And Ryan looked like was the one who was going to be.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be in the story as well. He seemed to be in a far more threatening situations. And there was that rather annoying moment where he does his little victory dance in this one, where I thought, was this going to be it? Is this going to be where his hubris has him taken out? But no. And I think that was a little disappointing. But again, this episode was so overloaded.
Last week's episode and the week before, essentially the Sidemen and the Frankenstein episode, we'll call it, because I can't remember the full title at the moment. I felt like I was watching something that I was really enjoying, and it felt like Doctor Who, and it felt like something that I would rewatch. Whereas this episode, I feels like something that I have to rewatch in order to make sure I've caught everything. But in terms of what I watched, it did feel like a bit of a mess, and I don't like watching things that are a bit of a mess. And I just feel sometimes when I've thought about this episode this morning that I'm not sure whether the show should be that kind of level of inconsistency within a single episode. In terms of the villa one was kind of well plotted and relatively tight, and the same essentially the Sidemen, not necessarily well plotted but extremely well produced, apart from the drone heads. This one felt like it was a mishmash of so many different things, from, you know, the strange presence of the Master in many ways to the comical Cybermaster Time Lord things. I looked at them. The first thing that came to my head was the old Dead Ringers sketch with John Coulshaw of living with the enemy when he lives with a family of Cybermen. And maybe there's not many of us are going to think of that, but at the same time, having been pulled out of something like that, and all they did was stand around in the silly headdresses and their robes as well, which. And if when there's so much bundled into one episode, then that means that certain opportunities are lost, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think this episode needed to take a dare, and it should have had them escape and then have them in the universe and then deal with them in another episode. You know, and that would have been the repercussions of going to Gallifrey, really. I know what you mean, but then very few of these end episodes of seasons are ever anything but like this. There's very few, well, that I can think of, you know, the Wedding of Riversong, Big Bang, that last one of Capaldi's. They're all often just an utter mess of ideas that just never really sink, because they just try to do too much. Which is my disappointment, as I said, because last season he seemed to work it out and go, we don't need all this bundle of stuff. We just need to tell a story. And I think that was severely missing. I mean, this would have been far better if they'd got rid of the cyber threat end of last episode and then gone to Gallifrey and then had to deal with the Master and the Doctor's history as the end finale. And that would have held it. You didn't need the Cybermen running around. And if that meant that you just had a 45-minute episode rather than a slightly longer one, fine.
Yeah.
I just think sometimes there's this stupid, ridiculous need to do this amazing end episode that you lose, it loses sight of being something which, as you say, and I agree, has rewatch factor to it. And there's very few that have actually got it right. I think Partings of the Ways was incredibly good.
Yeah.
That it managed to find that balance.
Definitely.
Last the Time Lords didn't. I mean, I still don't mind it going back to it, but it's still a bit of a mess. Too many things, too cluttered, and it's unpopular, isn't it? Let's face it. Doomsday was fairly well handled.
Yep.
I think that was a fairly strong one. Stolen Earth was probably a bit of a mess again. There's a lot of things going on there. It was a bit of a fanfare, but then that was meant to be his fanfare, I guess. End of Time, again, some people say was a bit cluttered and a bit of a mess. Perhaps that argument's fair, I'm not sure. But they do tend, as I say, Big Bang, and Moffat ones do tend, in my opinion anyway, to be very messy. So this didn't feel out of league in that sense, but I agree with you. You kind of feel like you can see where if they'd just taken out some of the stitches, that would have made a very nice dress. I know nothing about tailoring.
And tune in for next week's podcast for some more seamstress tips from James McLean. Shall we hit Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay.
I noticed that you've put up the same video that I was partially referring to, which I think's the Mind Robbers video on the early points of the William Hartnell.
Yes.
Which is a very good video worth watching. Anyway.
Yeah, they're all good videos from those guys on YouTube. They're definitely worth subscribing to if you bother subscribing to YouTube at all. Where do we start? We have had many, 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 many comments. So thank you to everyone who took part in that. I'm going to have to access it through the website because it's not loading up the comments properly. Normally we get about a dozen, maybe 14 comments, but this time there has been a hell of a lot of chatter about the episode. And, you know, it's hardly a surprise, is it really? Let's face it. So let's start at the top. The most recent comment is from Katie Poole, or one of the most recent, who says, on the one hand, it was bonkers, tension-filled, well-paced, but with other implications that would appear to be more personal and internal to the Doctor. On the other hand, we also get more poor exposition than you could wave a Sonic at. Another bad joke as an excuse for the writers not to have to write difficult dialogue about emotions. Oh, that'll be the Yas Graham exchange. The horrendous montage set to the theme tune. I quite enjoyed that bit, to be honest with you. with the Doctor looking like she was doing a particularly uncomfortable poo. And a very overblown Moffat-esque twist, which makes the Doctor the be-all, and if not end-all, then beginning all. The Matrix bit was with the Master, and actually with the Ruth Doctor, I did find it too floaty, heady. It was only that smoke was only a step up from floodlighting the old Blue Peter studio, wasn't it? Really, I think it could have been better done. Any thoughts?
It reminded me nostalgically of the sort of thing I'd seen in Deadly Assassin.
Yeah,
Matrix. There, it was a very similar feel. Whether that was intentional or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it probably was. There was another reference to Deadly Assassin, wasn't there, with the assassinating president's line from the Master.
Well, there was a lot of the design of Gallifrey, to be fair.
Yes. Which, yeah.
You could see, even though it was very badly damaged, was reference to the 70s design work.
Yeah, sure.
Panopticon's design. Yeah, carry on.
Nick Caulfield, again, thank you. Massive, massive contribution. From the point of view of the episode being a season finale and the end of a two or three parter, it was excellent. Lovely pacing, some nice bits of atmosphere. more positivity and nice references and mythology. He concludes, I'm less pleased that Gallifrey and the Time Lords have been destroyed yet again. These showrunners are like demonic, switching between Catholic and Protestant.
Interesting. Probably actually a lot you could write about that as well.
Yeah.
There is a lot of sort of, there is a sort of a Catholicism to Time Lord.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that. Go on.
I mean, there was no Rassilon, was there? No, and very only that one minor reference to Rassilon. And I kind of like the idea, after he was dismissed from Gallifrey by the 12th Doctor, that he wandered off and founded a new Time Lord civilization. Maybe Time.
Well, I think that's the other reason why I don't like the idea of Rassilon being this early character, because the end of Rassilon in that part of the show anyway just was, you know, him poddling off into the galaxy. I don't know, for a legacy that spans so long just seems a bit pathetic. I mean, to me, as I say, I need to rewatch it to see how I feel about that again, but to me, I don't see that character stress. I like the idea of it being the Bloom character, and maybe when that sort of becomes visible to Chibnall, whoever's running, maybe that will become the slight focus, because I think that makes more sense. We also forgot to sort of say the other, which is mentioned in Remembrance of the Daleks.
Well, it's only in the edit, though, isn't it? Yeah.
It's in the edit, and it's in and it's in the novelization.
Yeah.
And obviously it filters through into the new adventures. The idea of there being three at the beginning of Time Lord Society, well, in that point, Time Lord Society, Omega, Rassilon, and the other obviously being inferred to be the Doctor. This again fits very nicely into that.
Yeah, I do. Although there are obviously advantages to this, and again, the thing with the other, that kind of, at the time with BBC Books being, and the Virgin Books then being basically Doctor Who, that was Doctor Who.
That was officially Doctor Who.
That was officially Doctor Who. So anything that appeared in the books, that was, you know, canon at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it canonizes the Morbius Doctors, perhaps. But the other wasn't actually the Doctor, was it? The other was a...
He was genetically an incarnation who throws himself into an early loom, and his genetics become spun into the Doctor. Another Doctor who marries a human who has the child of Susan, who is another incarnation, who then that Susan goes back to the other, and the other sends her off with the Doctor. So it's a totally different mythology.
Yeah.
But the sort of strands of that myth prepare you for this sort of revelation, maybe.
Perhaps, yeah, perhaps. As noted, there's a lot of comments on here, so I'm going to try and jump in and take a few lines from each one. Jeff Wardle, a work of art, mind-blowing and mesmerising, which is... and there have never been better performances of a master than that. I'm not entirely sure whether or not that holds up to scrutiny long-term, but you clearly enjoyed it, so... all power to you. Justin Hicks, for once, could we get a forward-thinking showrunner who actually takes the concept of Doctor Who somewhere instead of muddying up an already established history? Brad Bourne, pretty easy to sum up. Didn't like it. I'll leave it there. Hamish Bell, the Timeless Children was strangely compelling. I was completely drawn in by its dark storytelling and adrenaline-fueled ride. Season-spanning loose ends began to draw together whilst the show's known mythos and history unraveled. I feel that there's more to come, and all is not what it seems. But if not, the Morbius Doctors finally get a rational explanation. There you go. Nigel Webb, who we've already... have we already heard from Nigel Webb? Not sure.
No,
we haven't. We will come back to Nigel Webb, because he's actually commented further down. Paul G, if it had focused on the Timeless Child or the Master of Sidemen, but it felt like too many strands being pulled together, a little bit what we said before. Rich Goldtree, a rewatch is definitely required, as there is so much going on. Shame the Brendan story didn't have a better payoff and there was no appearance by Captain Jack, but at least Cushing, Atkinson, Richard E. Grant, Broadbent and Joanna Lumley are now all canon. I suppose as well Lenny Henry.
Yeah, I mean, there is an argument that you don't have to accept everyone as canon just because there's been sort of comedy and one-offs. certainly I think there's certain things which you could potentially make canon, like the Shulker Doctor.
Yeah.
What else, other ones have we got there? Cushing's difficult, but not impossible. I mean, Cushing's difficult because he does sort of carry on and do the same stories that the other Doctor had, which, as we've seen with Dalek Jubilee and with Human Nature, not impossible for Doctor Who to do. I mean, was it Moffat, wasn't it, who suggested that that was a film in the Doctor Who timeline?
Yeah, the Cushing films.
Yeah, which is quite a smart postmodern idea. I kind of like that. But anyway.
Well, especially with a show that has an episode where the show is advertised on a bus.
Yeah.
The Forest in the Night. Is it called The Forest in the Night? The Garden in the Forest in the Night Garden. The Forest in the Eagle Pickle.
Forest in the Night.
Forest in the Night, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nigel Webb, I do feel rather wrung out, as he said we would, but in a good way. It was rather marvellous when the Doctor left and told her fam to lead good lives. It was heartbreaking, even on second viewing, as she definitely thought she was going to her death. You've had time to watch it twice? What? That was posted 16 hours ago. Okay. Trevor Arthur says it had everything. Lights, fat, cigar. Nice. Luke James, remember the days when people worried Moff would give us the Doctor's name? A lot of the Cartmel master plan here. Cybermen used as the Master's puppets. Again, don't have any personal interest in, I think it's pre-Hartnell Regenerations. Ending intrigued me. The TARDIS interior remains hideous. Lewis David Blaney, Doctor Who just drank 5 cans of Red Bull, snorted something suspicious and banged out one of the most wonderfully bonkers episodes. The Doctor's more complicated, and while we have answers, if anything, we now have even more questions. I need diagrams, a nap and a hug after that story.
It may be that this episode will get better on rewatch. I mean, I'm looking back and there were some very nice moments. I mean, there were some nice tense moments where they were hiding within the cyber outfits, which again seemed a bit absurd, but then we've had hiding in Daleks before, so it wasn't out of the crazy. Okay, that's the only moment that springs to mind, but I don't know. Maybe I think on a rewatch, it might seem a little less crazy and jumbled up than it did, you know, because when you're watching something, your expectations are higher once you know what it is.
Yeah.
On a rewatch, it might feel a little less crazy, and the strands might of what was trying to come across would become more clear. It was fun though, and I think we've got to remember that this show is like in its current incarnation 15 years old, and I still think it's doing interesting stuff. It's not doing perfect stuff, but it's, you know, it's still got us talking. And to be honest, for us as a podcast, these last 2 seasons have given us greater energy, even if it's stuff that has given us to actually have to mull over, not like, chew over. Do you know what I mean? Because by the end of the Moffat episode era, I mean, Brian, you know, eventually wandered off because he was just tired. And it was like, it's the same thing every year almost, this sort of half attempt to do something slightly new, but never really doing anything new, and just the same slightly jumbled, very cleverly written, but ultimately safe material, it felt like. And this is doing what hasn't really been done since Davis, to a degree, when Davis came out and said, we're doing a time war. This is a sort of the next big change. And I've got to say, that's given us something to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see how they kind of push forward with this. Obviously, there is the Dalek episode to come Christmas/New Year. I had to take a moment and run through all the Dalek episode stories in my head just to check that they hadn't used Revolution. Is there a comic strip called Revolution of the Daleks? I'm absolutely certain there is a Revolution of the Daleks out there somewhere.
Someone sort of glibly put on Twitter, I think, you know, Doctor Who doing brand new stuff, going into brand new areas. Next week, return to the old, you know, it's back to the Daleks. And there is a bit of a truth to that. People sort of saying as well, which I think is wishful thinking, is whether that prison's the Shard of prison.
Oh, right, yes. That would be interesting.
I'd be surprised if they went there, but
yes, would I.
No, I'm not seeing anything that says it's a comic book. But
no, I'm not. Quick. Someone, it's a name that cannot not have been used in the past, you know, since 1984. Someone has to have used it when they started reeling out the R's for Dalek episodes. So, well, whatever.
So do you want, I mean, just thinking from this point on, so obviously we'll have this episode later this year, back end of the year.
Yeah.
After that, do you want the show to sort of just go on as business as usual, or are you interested in seeing it occasionally trying to explore this? Is it something which sort of adds to our reflections and sort of arguably enriches what we already know to make us think in different ways, and that's what it should do? Or should it be trying to sort of find the roots of this and actually dare to go further and actually start putting money where the mouth has been?
Well, in some ways, I think there's this problem of getting too self-referential. And for an episode that bears some striking resemblances to the final two-parter of the 1986 run, which the writer of this story was hugely critical of on TV. Because we said this before, just get back to that thing of going on adventures, finding injustices and fixing them, and is exploring more about the Doctor's. But I mean, what can we learn more about the Doctor's background? What I mean, in terms of, I mean, if this was Marvel, this would be like it turning out that Captain America is an Eternal.
Because what they've done in a way is quite a clever, though. I'm sure many people in the comments will disagree. Is it because of what it's done, in a sense, it's sort of identified that the mystery of Doctor Who used to be in the 60s where he came from. We then found out he was a Time Lord from Gallifrey, and that became IKEA. Yeah. And then the new series, all it's been able to do with that is just reference that this is the Doctor's house, really, essentially. And sometimes the Doctor looks for his house. And now it's sort of said, well, actually wasn't really where the Doctor came from. Where the Doctor came from, no one knows. It was a portal from somewhere else, another place, another existence, another realm, who knows, and it was dropped into Gallifrey. Yeah. So now we've sort of recreated that myth of who the Doctor is, because we've known too much about the Doctor. So in that sense, I can see it sort of tried to sort of re-establish in a way that both Davis and Moffat kind of tried to, but wasn't really sure, or didn't really do, perhaps because they were too busy creating adventures.
Yeah,
the mystery of the Doctor again, and sort of, and what Cartmell was trying to do. A lot of people have sort of, as in our comments section, have said there's a lot of sort of Cartmellian thinking in this.
Yeah, and I've got no problem with that, but I don't want it to be self-referential. I don't want it to go off looking for answers and whatever. I just want it to carry on having adventures, and maybe, do you know, this was alluded to back with, which we've already mentioned, the Doctor's wife. Rumors about that episode that there was evil Time Lords. I'd like there to be lots of evil Time Lords. There's no need for the Time Lords to be the good guys when you've got the Doctor. You don't need an army of Doctors. Okay?
No, absolutely.
So why not? And you know, I kind of suggested it earlier with Rassilon. So if destroying Gallifrey for Christ's sake the last time means that maybe there's a ragtag bunch of evil Time Lords out there doing, maybe the division, maybe that is maybe that's what we're going to get. There are Time Lords out there, and they're bad guys, they're interferers. A bit like the Terence Dix wonderful characters in some of his BBC novels, The Players. Something like that going on. Yeah, let us completely do that. Some Time Lords coming to Earth and manipulating events and changing history entirely, and the Doctor having to sort things out. That kind of thing going on. Interference and proper bad guys as well. You know, like Ashad, like the chap we had earlier in this season, the bald chap on the spaceship. We're going down that path. I am absolutely all for it. That's what I want from Doctor Who, basically. But I don't want to go looking for the Doctor's true, quote-unquote, origins.
I reckon difficult. What you want is what we'll get. I know Chibnall's only technically got another year, and then it'll depend who comes after. But I don't feel the show's mandate really wants to go down that path. I don't think it will. I don't think it's going to become that sort of story changing. Because in a weird way, Moffat went down that dead end, didn't he, at the end of the Day of the Doctor, where it's like, you know, from here on, it's all going to be about the Doctor trying to find his way home, the long way round. So this sort of suggestion, things will be the same, but ultimately that's the end goal. That went within a season. So I think he'll be wise enough. I think what it might do is provide opportunities, like you say, to perhaps occasionally reinvent ideas, but largely keep the thing as it is, that it's going to be forward moving. Because in a sense, the Doctor says this at the end of the episode, isn't it? It's like, I'm okay with this. This is who I am. It doesn't change me. It makes me better almost. You know, jog on. Yeah. And that's seems to be, I think, the way that it's going to go forward. But I like the idea of, and I know we've talked about this a lot, and, you know, as you were saying about this idea of the sort of the War Games Time Lords, and the Division, which I assumed was just a new name for the Celestial Intervention Agency or whatever they used to call it. Division could be something that you could bring out of that new continuity and create as a foe. Because I think you're right. You need something bigger than the Doctor. And they almost did that this season when they had the return of Eternal characters, but then sidelined them very quickly. But you do need threats which are perhaps just one tier higher than they are.
Yeah.
Which we just don't see. It's more about sort of tiers which are lower than they are, which are en masse and need to be destroyed. And I think that would be a nice game changer, have the character on a run. I think they will start doing that. And I think part of that is because I think what Jodie's Doctor does very well this series is a little bit of the Davison and is occasionally back-footed and looks very vulnerable for it. And that, of course, creates tension and drama. And I think they'll probably want to look to do more of that with her specifically, because I think that's something that plays well with her.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, is this the point where we offer proper ratings?
I would give it, I mean, I think as a story, I would probably give it like 7.5 and 8, just in terms of structure. Because, I mean, it kept me entertained. It was quite dynamic. There was lots of things going on, but ultimately it felt jumbled. The fact that you had to have the guy come over and sort of then introduce himself at the very end to his backstory to justify him taking the button kind of felt like, well, we really needed this earlier, didn't we? And again, this is a bit of an old hat approach. And, you know, there were things like, oh, we conveniently have bombs to destroy the cyber ship. And we know our way around, not just a citadel which we've never been to before, but a destroyed citadel which is going to be very hard to traverse. We can get to the right parts really quickly. No, there was a lot of having to excuse the show for rushing, which brings it down as a story. However, I think this is a very neat way to reinvigorate a show. I think it's a smart way. I think it adds mystery. It adds a little justification to the character. It does change how we perceive it. It does change how some of the, especially the, well, not even the ancillary stuff, not even just Big Finish, but poor Stephen Moffat, a lot of the stuff that he was sort of doing with Clara suddenly becomes less groundbreaking. And do you know what I mean? It's big changeover stuff for the main series and all the other bits and pieces. So I'm going to give it 8.5, because I think that was really well justified. So a bit of a mess, still fun, but some really nice new ideas, which I've got to get behind and go, yeah, I think the show needed something like this. They just needed to perhaps unpack some of the stuff they had in this episode, or maybe had it as a three-parter, which I know they weren't going to do, but it needed three parts, and then it could have possibly worked. First part, then the second part, you introduce the Master and have the Cybermen. End of the second part, Master removes the Cybermen. End part, Master versus Doctor. And that would have probably flowed far better.
Okay. I think if this had been a comic strip in sometime between 1989 and 2004-05, I would have thought it was the bestest thing ever. Seeing it in its televisual form and with other episodes of Doctor Who that obviously done a better job of certain things than this episode, I think I'm probably going to say it's not the bestest thing ever. It's satisfying. It kept me gripped. I don't feel that it entertained my wife, however, like a lot of recent Doctor Who post Matt Smith. So I'm going to, for me though, I think it's probably a 6, I think.
You're a
bit messy,
man.
In places, yeah. Just messy in places, some good sequences, bit of a mishmash, bit of a jumble, too much Basil exposition in the Matrix. Yeah, 6.
I mean, I thought there were some missed opportunities to do the Cybermen some justice. Because again, while in terms of Cybermen, this was one of the better stories.
Yeah, I love the new Cyberman design, by the way. I think I said last week, but I mean, seeing them in full glory for a full episode, I really do like that design. I think it's the best one since 2005.
Yeah, so same here. I really like it as well. I just kind of feel, again, they were relegated to stomping and shooting badly.
Yeah.
And I felt like, again, it depends on how dark you want the show to go. But there was bits of me which was kind of expecting, when one of them was wearing the suits, that they were going to be converted. It was going to convert them while they were wearing the suit, something quite dark like that.
Yeah.
Or the one who was shot would be later seen as a Cyberman. You know, something that was just a little more than them just shooting people and being shot. I felt it needed that twist of darkness, which might have been too dark for younger viewers. Maybe that's why it wasn't done. But that's really what they are, aren't they? They needed to have a feeling of what their threat was rather than just... I mean, I like the line where they sort of said, because I thought the person was shot dead at the beginning, but then there was a suggestion that maybe that was just like a stun and then they would be converted. But that was very confusing with the new ideology that they should all be wiped out.
Yes.
So I don't know what was going on there. But yeah, that was something the show failed to me with the Cybermen, is if you're going to do the Cybermen, you make their thing about conversion, you've got to play that true. Otherwise, they do just become a load of stompy, shooty things. And I think that was one of the letdowns as well for me.
Yeah. And I mean, well, I know we referred to this earlier with the episode in question, but there was rumours that John Barrowman was going to be in the final. Obviously, he hasn't been. He may be in the Christmas episode. Don't know. But his whole warning of the lone sideman, who isn't really a lone sideman because he clearly has an army, which doesn't sound very lonely to me, does turn out to be completely pointless, doesn't it? He said, don't give him what he wants, so the Doctor gives him what he wants. And ultimately, the lone sideman's not much of a threat. He turns into the MacGuffin, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Which is a strange thing, and which is a shame, because I think I would have liked to see more lone Cyberman in other episodes.
Yeah, I know. There seemed to be, he seemed to me like a new take on Davros, so far as you're giving a motivation to an otherwise very homogenous creature. And I was, kind of disappointed that he was removed, especially for the Master, who, as I say, he just wasn't doing it for me this episode. He's got a range, but it was just too silly, too over the top, and it didn't feel... I didn't feel a dynamic between the two of them as actors like I felt in Spyfall. They felt, I think, because they were playing two very different storylines. She was playing a very dark storyline, and he was dancing, and that just didn't work for me. And I kind of felt that this was a story, and given the ramifications of what it was all about, he needed to be dialed back. And I think that would have really worked for him in this moment. This was an excuse to dial him back and just have him without the Whedonisms, and just have him as a cold, angry character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a load of mistakes. Stop it. I'm going to give it an 8 soon. It did annoy me. In fact, I think I will give it an 8 because... Yeah, he was a real problem through the episode, and it wasn't the actor, it's not even the interpretation of the character, just the wrong time to be deployed in that sort of way.
So, yeah, that brings us to the end of this podcast, looking at, to give it the correct title, The Timeless Children. It's the end of Doctor Who Series 12. Now, we're going to be taking a break for a few weeks. And some of that time will be taken to rest, and other time will be taken to record new episodes. So we'll be back in about a month's time, around Easter, with some new podcasts for you. But stay tuned on the website, because we've got some things to show you there. In the meantime, big thanks from myself and James McLean. Keep the conversation going on Facebook, and don't forget to visit the Facebook page regularly for interesting items. Until next time, from us, it's goodbye.